It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Man, it's just going to be a fantastic, fantastic day. We have a great show lined up. Sue Ann Dunleavy on the show, as well as William Cantrell. It's going to be a fantastic show. I say this because, as you guys know, you get the show for free, but you know, some shows, in my humble estimate, are worth hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars. This is going to be one of those shows. What else is happening this week? Oh, you know what? Is it this week? No, it's next week. I'll be out in sunny Los Angeles. You know what? I could be wrong. In a couple of weeks, I'll be out in sunny Los Angeles. May 9th, I'll be out in sunny Los Angeles, Burbank area, actually. Going to be hanging out with James Caan and his gang, if you will. Joe Montana is going to be out there. A couple other celebs are going to be out there. And we're raising awareness for Impact House. So if you're going to be out there, come, you know, come hang out with us. Just go to Facebook, type in Impact House, James Caan, Celebrity Golf, Celebrity Golf Game, Celebrity Golf Permanent. For some reason, I can't say that word right now. But anyway, James Caan and Celebrity Golf, you'll find it. And he doesn't promote it as much as you would think. It's very low-key, but it's a lot of fun. We get a lot of people out there. So something that you may want to do. You know, this is a sad thing here, and I apologize to everybody. Luckily, today's show is being taped. So all of that dead air that we've had for the last, 10 or 15 seconds while I thought I was talking, almost 2.5 minutes while I was talking, will be filtered out. So Amy, make sure that's taken care of. But it is going to be a fantastic show. So what I was saying before I was rudely interrupted by my own incompetence was today's show, Sue Ann Dunleavy and William Cantrell, it's going to be a blockbuster-type show. You guys get the show for free, but let me tell you, some of our shows, in my estimate, are worth $1,000. Because of the nuggets that you learn in these shows. And I think this is going to be one of those shows. Not to put any pressure on Sue or William, but, you know, I think we're going to have a blockbuster show here. Really going to be laying down some nuggets of information, how to monetize your blog. We're going to be talking about you and your money as well, some investments decisions. Not this week, but I think next week. Maybe it's the week after that. In a couple of weeks. May 9th, I'll be out in the Burbank area. Going to be helping James Caan and some other celebrities with the James Caan golf outing. It's a celebrity golf game. And we're going to be bringing awareness to Impact House. That's James Caan's, nonprofit that he raises money and awareness for. So if you're going to be out in California, maybe we can meet May 9th. All right. Enough of this. Let's get the party started. My first guest, Sue Dunleavy, takes the guesswork out of building a profitable blog. The owner of Successful Blogging, she has been passionate about business since she started her own toddler daycare group at her swim club at age 12. After 27 productive, rewarding, but stressful years in sales and sales training, blogging has provided her with the freedom to reinvent her life and set a more enjoyable pace. Sue Dunleavy, welcome to Money for Lunch.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today.
You bet. I'm excited about this. You know, it's good to have somebody here that knows how to make money at blogging, because The reality is, from what I could tell, most bloggers don't make any money at blogging.
You are 100% right. It's like 98.5% of bloggers make less than $1,000 a year. It's absurd. And, you know, people are struggling to figure out this blogging thing, and I help them cut through the junk and build a profitable blog without all that guesswork.
Well, good. So let's talk about this. First of all, why don't you give us a little background story. What attracted you to blogging? And here you are, you're in the successful corporate world, you're doing sales and sales training, and all
right.
of a sudden, blogging attracted you. Why?
Well, it was kind of a little bit of the opposite. I got sick. I had a stress-induced illness, an autoimmune illness, and I had to stop working. So I was sick probably my last 6 years of corporate sales management. And I went to the doctor and he said, Sue, you can't work 12-hour days. You can't be jumping on planes. You can't be doing this anymore. And so what do you do when you get that big wake-up call of you can't work anymore and you're making six figures? It's hard. So I decided that, yeah, I'm going to take a few months off and make that decision. And the decision was, after a few months, yeah, I have to take early retirement. And I was only 54, and that sounds old, I know, to some of your listeners, but it's young, right?
It is.
Too young to sit around the house and not do anything. So I decided to write a book about stress management because I had learned what I needed to do to take care of myself. And after I wrote the book, I said, you know what, this blogging thing looks kind of interesting. I'm going to try that out. And it worked. I got mentors and coaches. Instead of getting like an MBA, I invested the money in coaching. And it has worked out really well for me. I started a stress management blog and did that for 3.5 years and then sold it and bought Successful Blogging almost 2 years ago and haven't looked back since.
Wow. That's amazing. And here's what's kind of what's the word I want to look at? Here's what I want to point out. Some people would have gotten this autoimmune situation,
mm-hmm.
and it would have been their
devastated.
Yes, their it would have been their cry for victimhood, right? Oh, poor is me, you know,
yeah.
how am I going to survive,
yeah.
blah, 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 blah. You were a different mindset, and you said, okay, what do I do? How do I reinvent myself? And that simple question changes your life and now is changing lives of other people.
Yeah, I've never thought of it that way, but it's really true. I'm changing lives of other people, still giving back, but actually, you know, making money and supplementing the retirement very nicely. So, yeah, I could have been a victim and decided that is not my thing. My thing is to help other people have a family-friendly lifestyle. I mean, I'm home with my dog, but they can be home with their kids.
Sure, sure, absolutely. All right, let's get into this. So I can see it now. There are people who are going, Sue, I've been blogging for years, I make like a buck a year. So how do I monetize? How can I make money off my blog?
Well, I usually recommend to my readers and my clients that they either do affiliate products in the beginning where they can start building a list, getting traffic, and selling someone else's products or services until they create their own training course or all-day workshop online or locally or training or some type of, ebook. But to really build the traffic is the key. You need, you know, when you first start out, maybe your mom and your best friend read your blog, and
right.
you have to really make that transition to getting to know other bloggers. It's not really a competition. Everyone's very friendly. Promoting your blog both on social media and on interviews like this and other ways that you can connect with your ideal readers.
Yeah, no, I like that. Now, okay, so let me ask you this. when you're talking to somebody, and I'm sure this comes up quite a bit, they may ask you, okay, well, what should I blog about? What's the most profitable kind of blog? Do you get those kind of answers or questions?
Oh, what's your answer? Questions all the time. Like, I'll blog about whatever's going to make me the most money.
Right.
And it doesn't quite work that way, because that might be something you're not at all interested in or not really an expert about. And it's not going to really, you know, you'll burn out. You won't be able to blog, you know, once a week or even every other month to, you know, every other week rather, to, you know, keep up the traffic if you don't like what you're talking about. The key, I believe, is to find what you're an expert at. And you don't have to be the expert like you've written a book or, you know, you've gotten an MBA or something of that nature. You just need to know more than your readers know, and you need to be able to solve a problem for them. If you can solve a problem that's a kind of a wake up in the middle of the night problem, like I need to lose 10 pounds, or I got to make money with my blog, or I'm really eating poorly and the doctor's on my case, those kind of problems, people will pay for an answer.
Yes, I like that. And I want to just emphasize what you said. You cannot chase the money. That is always, always a losing proposition, right? You have to blog about things that you are passionate about. I have a client who blogs and writes about keeping your house plants alive. When she first told me that this is what she liked to do, I just thought, oh, well, okay, well, maybe, you know, I just, you know, I didn't know what to tell her. It's like, I don't know anything about house plants, and I don't know how serious of an issue that is, but, you know, the more I thought about it, I realized, well, you know what, my wife has struggled for years on keeping her house plants alive. And so
I have a black thumb, I always say. Yeah,
there you go. So now, because she's been doing this now for 3 years, and she does she does a couple of things. She does do affiliate products, plus she has some of her own courses on how to keep certain houseplants alive. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that a little bit. She does over $150,000 a year in revenue.
Isn't that amazing? Who would think, but she is solving a problem.
Yes.
For people that, like me, who kills every plant that comes into the house. So it really does make a difference. And I have a vegetable gardener client. So Megan has a successful vegetable gardening membership group where people come to connect with her and hang out and find out more about, you know, creating their own vegetable garden and feeding their family organic vegetables. It's amazing what you can blog about and do well.
Yes, yes. All right, so let's talk about this, because the other thing that comes up is the time constraints. I mean, you kind of hit upon it. You know, are you going to, you know, blogging every week or sometimes every day? Or so. How do I manage my time? Do you have any tips or strategies for blogger/time management?
Yeah, I do. And it's interesting because I always tell my readers and clients to blog less. And everybody's always shocked because you think, oh, I should be doing it 3 times a week. Or, you know, it doesn't really help. It's better to do a fabulous, wonderful post once a week or even every other week than to just be churning out content that people, you know, it's just average content.
Right.
And you don't have to be the best, you know, the best writer on earth. You just have to solve the problems. So I teach my clients, and this has helped me even when I was in corporate, the golden hours. So it's a method of productivity that Jim Edwards taught me, and this is how it works. You start your day with 60 minutes of work. You're not checking email. You're not on social media. You're actually doing income-producing activity. And then you take a 15-minute break. You know, take a walk, do a little stretching, you know, grab some water or a snack, and then do your second golden hour of 60 minutes of work. and even take a longer break, maybe that time, maybe a 30-minute break, and then you can check email. Then you can check in. But if you get those solid 2 hours of work done every day of income-producing activity, it's amazing how much you get done, and you're much better off than the average blogger out there.
You know, what you just said, I hope everybody picked up on that. This is a $1,000 strategy. This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. This one strategy will make some of you guys have a more peaceful life, have more time freedom, will make you more money. Because the reality is that a lot of us will spend 4 or 5 hours in front of a computer and get nothing done.
Ah, so true, right?
It's just mind-boggling. I cannot tell you how many times that has happened to me personally, where I have spent the entire day in front of a computer. My wife will ask me, what did I get done?
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get anything done.
Exactly.
I can't tell you anything. You know, it's just like, I don't even know where the time went. But just, and I love this idea of just focusing not on an 8-hour day, but on a 1 hour and then a second hour. So you're working on 2 hours. You're focusing on getting stuff done for 2 hours. Anybody can do that. You take some breaks in there so you don't get burnt out. This is a great strategy. And so you came up with this with a guy named, did you say Edwards?
Jim Edwards. He's an internet marketing guy. He's very sharp. And he had the same problem. We all do that in the beginning, right, when you're on your own, any entrepreneur. You just get involved in a bunch of stuff that isn't going to make you money. And if you think, oh, 2 hours a day, that's not enough. It's more than the average person does.
Yes, yes. You know, what I started doing is I would, use, this will, you know, date me a little bit, but I used to have a digital watch, and so the whole premise was that you would kind of hit the stopwatch.
At work.
You know, at work. And so you hit the stopwatch, and then every time you got interrupted in your workday, you would hit it again or something like that. And then if you did, you know, it's a little tough to do at first. But bottom line is, you know, you could literally spend, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 hours at the office, and then you look at your stopwatch or whatever, and because of so many interruptions and distractions and stuff like that, you've only actually worked for 2 hours.
It's so true. And there's actually a book on a similar method. You probably read it and totally, you know, forgot it because it's been out for a long time, the Pomodoro technique. And it's exactly that. Like, do 25 minutes of work and a 5-minute break. Jim Edwards just extended it to an hour and then a break to, you know, to make it the golden hours. But if you have to start shorter of like 25 minutes and really concentrate, that's okay, because it's hard to do that concentration, right, Bert?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's talk about this. What is, let's say, the one thing someone could do today to be a more successful blogger?
It's a really good question. I think reading the blogs of people that have made it, like John Morrow of smartblogger.com or a Yaros Starek at entrepreneursjourney.com, or even Sue at successfulblogging.com, we have a way that if you follow a couple of good blogs that know how to get you to make money with a step-by-step blueprint so that the money's consistent. You know, it's one thing to have a big launch and then not make any money for 5 months, but if you can keep that money coming in consistently, that's what they teach, and that's what I teach, and it really helps to make a difference. And the golden hour method really helps also. So get the right training, whether it's me or somebody else, and, you know, put in some time constraints and some thought about what you're passionate about, and you can do it. Solve a problem.
Yes, I love that. And again, I want to emphasize the last word you used there, solve a problem. It's really about solving a problem. and here's the other thing I've learned, and I want to get your opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
What comes easy to you, so whether it's houseplant, keeping houseplants alive, or cooking healthy, or photography, or you know whatever it is that comes mm-hmm. healthy to you, comes easy to you, that's your gift. That's why it comes easy to you. But it doesn't necessarily come easy to me. And
exactly.
So some people,
it's like your superpower, right? It's
yes,
like your superpower.
That's right. And some people will say, well, you know, everybody knows how to do this. Everybody knows how to grow a healthy house plant. Not true. Everybody
a vegetable garden.
Vegetable garden, whatever it is, it's not true. So just because it comes easy to you, like you said, it's your superpower, it's a gift, and the only way to really utilize that gift is to share it with people, help them solve their problem. And, you know, Sue, we're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back and talk more about successful blogging and some more tips and tricks. We got into affiliate marketing. It's a great way to build some revenue. There's some other things that you can do. And if you want, you can check out Sue at successfulblogging.com?
Successfulblogging.com, yeah. And if they want a free report that I have, just put www.successfulblogging.com/1000, the number 1000. And there's a free report on how to get your first 1,000 subscribers in 30 days.
I love that so much. Your first 1,000 subscribers, successfulblogging.com. Sue, thank you so much for stopping by.
It was a pleasure. Take care.
All righty. Good stuff there. From Sue Ann Dunleavy. It's just, you know, one of those things. A lot of the things that she talked about is applicable not only in blogging, but in business in general. Do what you love, what you know about, solve people's problems, right? Just because it comes easy to you doesn't mean everybody knows how to do it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. Our next guest is here to help you with your financial success. William Cantrell, financial advisor. William's passion is helping his clients find their unique path to financial success. His primary focus is on first setting goals that can guide you in making decisions about investments, insurance, taxes, and estate preservation, so you can enjoy what is most important to you. William Cantrell, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. I'm happy to be here.
All right, so let's jump into this. In your estimate, what are the most important steps in actually creating an investment plan?
Well, I like to help people think in terms of three, grouping ideas and grouping their actions in terms of three. So, excuse me, to me, an investment plan should start with what I call beginning with the end in mind, which we probably all heard of somewhere along the way. But what do we want to have? And by when do we want to have it? And how much money will it require? Once we have an idea of what we're looking to accomplish, we can begin to build that investment plan. So step one is just let's establish what we're trying to accomplish and by when, and then get an estimate of how much money that will require.
Yeah, I like that. It's something, you know, this is so interesting is that this is a very simple, what do you call it, simple strategy, and I think this is why so many people overlook it. What's your take?
Well, I think so, and I think oftentimes there are situations where someone may be thinking about retirement, for example, which for many people appears to be a long ways away time frame wise, and so it's something I'll get to later in life, and they look at it as a rather large, daunting task, not something that they really need to sit down and focus and hone in on and establish that time frame and that desire and then the amount of money. The other thing we need to do once we've begun to think about something like this is we need to understand that investing versus savings investing takes on risk. And so we need to be able to understand and establish for ourselves how much risk we're willing to take in creating an investment plan. And that's done through a process of asking questions, filling out a questionnaire, talking with an advisor who can help you determine, am I a risk taker or am I not? I have clients that their idea of taking risk is having 50% of their investment dollars in the stock market, and other clients who want at least 80% or more. So establishing that risk is a big factor and often is what I consider to be step two before we build that complete investment plan.
Yeah. Now, something that you kind of hit there was, you know, the different risk tolerance that we have. And I think sometimes that's based on what prior experience and also where you're at in life too. I mean, if you're talking to a 25, 30 year old, he's probably willing to risk a little bit more than if you're talking to a 70 or 80 year old.
I couldn't agree more. And for good reason, one of the things that we've learned about investing is that over time, we can predict what an investment will do. We know that stocks, for example, have returned over the last 70 years or greater, have returned about 10% a year on average. Bonds have returned more like 6% a year on average. So we know there's a risk premium, they call it, for investing in stocks. But what we also understand is that most people don't have a 70-year time horizon. So if you only have a 5 to 10-year time horizon for when you want to access your investment, then you need to understand that the guarantee or the prediction of a 10% return goes away the shorter the time period we have to have that money invested, because stock markets go up and down, bond markets go up and down, and we don't really know exactly when they're going to return 10% or lose 10% or grow 30% or drop 20%. We just know over a longer period of time what we can predict, which is why for most people, the younger people in particular, investing at least part of their money in the stock market is probably a good idea if they're trying to grow their investment portfolio.
Yeah, no, I like that. And here's something, you know, I think the hardest thing, and you know, we've kind of, it's been implied in our conversation so far, and I think the hardest thing, I know this is the hardest thing for me, is when you're young, the old phrase, young and dumb, right? And it's hard to imagine investing for your retirement now.
Sure.
It's such a foreign concept.
I agree.
Right? And then you and I could sit here and we could talk to a bunch of 20-year-olds and let them know that they're going to be our age quicker than they think, but they just can't conceive that. They will not believe us.
Well, there's always going to be more money down the road to have for discretionary activities in their minds. So they will, you know, the 20 to 30-year-olds or even the 30 to 40-year-olds who are establishing their financial capacity are concerned about getting things that are more tangible to them right now, and or getting married, raising a family, and then the expenses turn into family expenses. And so at some point in time, the idea of putting more money away for the future becomes a little bit more of a reality, but oftentimes that's the mid-40s or so. And I really encourage people to examine the idea of putting a little bit away consistently, particularly early on in life. The power of compound investing or compound return is amazing if you can get people to start in their 20s to just put away a little bit. And I put some things on blogs, and I've got some presentation material that demonstrates that. But investing between 10 between 25 and 35 and then stopping versus investing from 35 to 55 the same amount. So you're really investing double because you're investing, let's say it's $5,000 a year from 25 to 35 and stopping investing versus investing 35,000, 35 to 55 and then stopping. You will have amassed by the time you're 65 50% more money if you just invest in the first 25 to 35 years and then stop. So the compounding is an extremely powerful benefit if you can get yourself to take advantage of it.
Yes, absolutely. If you guys want to make yourself a couple of million dollars, take what Bill has just talked about. Play around with the numbers. There's a lot of stuff online that talks about that. I think that there is a great story illustrated that, you know, these two guys, I don't know, maybe they're twin brothers or whatever, they set out, they make the same kind of money, and the only difference is that brother one does exactly what you're talking about. He started investing and saving at the age of, from 20 to, 20 to 45, and the other brother did it from 45 to 65, and the difference was a couple of million dollars.
Yep. It will happen. It will happen.
Yeah. No,
there was a study that I picked up on, and it's a little dated now, but it's in a piece that I wrote a while back. But in November of 2012, dailyfinance.com had done a survey. 38% of people aged 45 to 54 had less than $100,000 saved for retirement. And that's pretty staggering. And another 23% didn't even want to answer the question. So that tells you that they didn't have a lot either. So unfortunately, and that's another aspect of building an investment plan, is that determining how much money that I'm going to need to put away. Because what happens is a lot of times people don't have a sense of how much money they're going to need. The shorter the goal, the easier it is to figure out how much money will I need. If I'm going to save for a house, I can pretty well lock in that dollar amount that I'm going to need in, let's say, 5 years, and I can estimate it on my own. If I'm trying to come up with something that's a 20-year or a 30-year or 40-year goal, it becomes much more complicated to understand how do I determine what that number is, and then how do I build an investment plan that will allow me to get there. And that, to me, is where having a financial advisor can really help you sort through those various algorithms and also the various decisions that you need to make to understand what you should be doing over the next 20 or 30 years.
Absolutely. All right, so let me ask you this. What is the difference between a financial advisor like yourself and, let's say, my insurance agent or my stockbroker who can offer me financial instruments?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the training that they have. In my case, I'm a certified financial planner. So much like an attorney or a certified public accountant, a certified financial planner has to go through training in several different areas. The ones that I mentioned or that you mentioned earlier in my introduction: taxes, insurance, retirement planning, estate planning, investments, are all separate components of training that I've passed certification on to be a certified financial advisor. An insurance agent who can offer many of the same products or similar products that I could may be much more narrowly focused into passing an insurance exam, which I have done as well, but I'm just saying that may be their sole focus. In the case of a broker, they may have a license. A Series 7 is common, a license that you have to pass to be able to sell investment products. So the biggest difference is what is your training, and then also what do you want to do once you've been trained, and what have you done? So I think training and experience play a huge role in helping somebody understand, if I'm going to seek somebody to help me, what kind of a person am I getting in one case, and really what am I looking for? So that to me is the big difference.
Sure, sure. And I think that, you know, obviously at least in the question I threw out there, you also have a different focus. A financial advisor is going to have a more rounded, choices. And as you said, is what are you looking for versus a broker can probably only sell you stocks and bonds. And then insurance agent can only probably sell you insurance related annuities or whatever. And so they're all limited.
Yeah, what I've seen, and this is unfortunate in my opinion, is what I've seen is oftentimes if I'm talking to someone, either a client or a would-be client, and their exposure to the financial service providers and some of the individuals that they've talked with, they do have a narrow focus, and they may be recommending instruments, investments, or insurances or whatever to clients, without understanding the complete picture for the client. They may not know the client's tax record. They may not know whether the client how many different goals they have, and may not even know completely what their existing investments are like, but they'll often have something that they want to promote to the individual, and that's unfortunate because I think that that kind of gives us a little bit of a negative viewpoint expressed to individuals who are trying to seek help and yet maybe aren't getting the best help that they could get because somebody doesn't take the time to learn about the client holistically, I guess I'd say.
Yes. No, I like that. Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so you also have written a book. Let's talk about that for a few seconds here. Financial Point Man's Success Strategy. This is Volume 4, Estate Planning, available on Amazon by William H. Cantrell. Who's this book for?
This is for the person who wants to learn what all estate planning is all about, but wants to have the fog taken out. It's strictly a layman's book. I'm not an attorney. What I do is I put together a book, and I'm doing a series. But it's basically saying why is estate planning important to you, and what are some of the various terms that are used. I find estate planning tends to be one of those intimidating topics. Nobody wants to talk about their own death. They always think about it being death related. So, I got a will. Why do I need anything else? Why would I need a trust or where would it fit? So I just tried to do it as a layman because that's the way I talk to my clients. I help them understand why estate planning I feel is so extremely important. And quite frankly, I help them design what they are going to talk with their attorney about. And oftentimes I'll sit in with the attorney also to just facilitate the meeting because I know so much about the client.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And I also want to emphasize, you've said this a couple times, is knowing what the client's needs are. A lot of people don't ask the questions. They're looking for that one size fits all because they have a limited amount of knowledge, limited amount of products that they can serve you from. But knowing your goals, knowing your tax bracket, as you mentioned, Bill, knowing all these different things can help put together a plan that is really right for you. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I grew up in the comprehensive planning world. So from day one, I was trained and it was just easy for me to fall into. What I want to do is I want to be able to help you no matter what your need is, whether it's insurance, estate planning, taxes, whatever, investment. So I want to know the whole person before I start advising them. And quite frankly, I'm not good at or interested in just what I describe as sort of one-off situations. I've got $100,000 to invest. What do you think I ought to do with that? You know, I have to understand you well enough to make you a complete client just to be able to answer that kind of question for me personally to be comfortable doing that.
Sure, absolutely. And I think that to me is probably a sign of an unsophisticated investor. Hey, I have $100,000. What's the best play for it? It's kind of a red flag right away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Bill, we're out of time. It's been a blast having you on the show. Great strategies here. If you want, you can reach out to Bill at CantrellFinancialStrategies.com. Is that the best website, Bill?
That's it. CantrellFinancialStrategies.com. And Bill at CantrellFinancialStrategies.com will get it to me, and I've got blogs there and several other opportunities for you to connect with me.
Great, Bill. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Good stuff there from Bill Cantrell about you and your money. And I hope that you guys understand that there is a huge difference between one financial advisor, and I'm using that phrase lightly, one financial advisor versus a certified financial advisor. What a huge difference between somebody who's got four or five products, one size fits all, versus sitting down with somebody who is willing to spend time to find out who you are, what your needs are, and what's going to be best for you. And if you're not saving at least 10% of your money, you're doing yourself and your family a huge disservice. And don't wait. If you can't afford, for whatever reason, can't afford 10%, save 8%, save 5%, save something. Get into the habit. Build the muscle. Over time, you'll be so grateful you did. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.